one more Maimer Chazal that we did not yet do. That is, it's the second line. Okay, the second on the very, very bottom of the page. On page 84 in the Art School edition. Again, it's Mizmar Yud, Pasuk Gimel. On the very bottom of the page, the Likutei Shas U'Midrash HaTanoim, it says here, Rabbi Eliezer's second line, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yishel, Rabbi Yosef Gili Omer, also L'dayonim L'vtsoya L'fasher Bein Bali Hadinim Mishabo L'bezid. An entirely new idea. We struggle, the word Uvaitseya. Up until now, across the board, even in the Agadah and in the Pshat, we've consistently translated the word uvaitseya as meaning a gazlan, a person who steals. That's how we've translated this word. That, again, there's the Mitzudais, Rashi, we learned the Maamar Chazal yesterday from the Gemara Masechta of the Kamen, Sanhedrin, but now we're going to a new Maamar Chazal, and in this Maamar Chazal, the word Botseya does not mean a ganaf. It means a compromise. Compromise. So two litigants come to court. We're talking over here about what is the ideal. We're not talking about America 2022. Right? We're up to now 2022. Three twos. You have three types of people. Those who know and those who don't know. three twos. 2022. We're not discussing the way we do things. We're discussing the way things were done in time immemorial. The real deal. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yishel, Rabbi Yosef ben Omer, also L'dayan L'vtsoya. And over here, the editor did us a toiva. He gave us a translation. And the word L'vtsoya means over here, L'fasher, to compromise. It is also for a judge to provide a compromise bein balei hadin mishabon l'bezdin. He must exercise exact din. If Reuven and Shimon are quarreling, the Dayan opens up the Shulchan Aruch and he sees what it says and he decides the halacha, the dispute according to the halacha, even though that means one person is going to walk out very upset, will walk out with nothing. Don't the judge not say, you know what, let me be a nice guy, I'll make a compromise. They're fighting over $100. I'll give this one 50 and this one 50.
Right, exactly.
You hit the nail on the head. Only when it's a clear-cut case. Usually today, there's another side to the story. Today, if it happens to be that people end up in Beis Din, 99% of the time, it's not so clear-cut. Because if it was so clear-cut, you know, there's nothing to talk about. There's nothing.
It's not clear with someone's lying.
Right. Someone's lying or it's not clear. That's why you go to Bezin. If it was so obvious what the halacha is, right, I mean, what's what you call the police, right? What's there to talk about? What was unique is that back in the day, although it was not clear cut to the litigants, to the average person, there were Talmidei Chachamim, there were brilliant people in Klal Yisrael who today it was clear cut. They knew the halacha. We don't know the halacha. We're not knowledgeable in the halacha. They are, but we trust them, and they know exactly what the halacha is. You don't know the halacha. That's your problem. But we know what the halacha is. They spent their lives learning. They know what the halacha is.
Most people are buying this towards their own opinion.
100%. 100%.
Well, if you have,
that's why you have a bezin of three dayanim. You have to go through the majority.
There's two different things. There's facts, and there's the
bias.
There's the halacha, the facts of the case, and how the halacha applies to the case.
Right, okay. This is the fact, okay, you say.
So
what are the facts?
The two parties can only disagree about the facts. They can't.
But you should know today we live in such a complicated world that sometimes the facts are also very complicated.
Right.
Okay, so everything is up, but let's, like, obviously, if we work backwards, today it says in Shulchan Aruch itself that no one knows the halacha. Things are so complicated today, we all know that, we don't have people of a caliber, we discussed this so many times, we don't have people today on the caliber that can really, you know, really fully comprehend the big picture and understand what happened. and know the halacha and what to do. Therefore, today, when you go to a Jewish court, you're really going for arbitration. That's really what it is. No one's apologizing. That's the reality. However, just because it's arbitration, you know, there are basic halachas. You open up a Shulchan Aruch, sometimes people just don't know the basics. There's a Shulchan Aruch, and there's what to learn, there's what to know. Can anyone say that they know they've yored le'oimkei shel davar? No, no one can say they know it. They know with such depth and such full depth. But there's a basic approach. There is basic principles. But no one today can say they're confident and that they got it right. So therefore, today when a person at Rachman al-Islam ends up in a Jewish court, what do the Dayanim do? They look at the facts, they look at the halacha, and they say, it appears basically this person is right. Could we say he's 100% right? Not necessarily. So they make a decision, 80-20, 90-10, 75-25, 50-50 sometimes. Okay?
Do you see how this relates to our pasuk?
Yes, that's what he's saying over here. Uboitzea berech, so the pasuk not to do this.
Because the word uboitzea here means break.
To break, 50-50.
So they
split. Correct. Exactly. That's what, in this interpretation, the word boitzea now became, this is not discussing our generation. Or maybe it is discussing our generation, but it's in a situation where it would apply in our generation, where judges see that the proper thing to do according to halacha would be 80-20. We'll give one party 80% and the other one 20%. But you know what? The people here, there's such amaratzim. We'll do it 50-50. we'll make a pshara down the line, 50-50. That's corrupt. That's blasphemy. That's what the pasuk over here says. Where dayanim know what the halacha is, what it should be, and that has to be calibrated in our generation because we don't really know too much anyway. And yet they go against the grain, and for political correctness, not to ruffle the feathers of the rich man or not to suffer the wrath of the government. So, you know what? We'll make boitzea, like Rav Chol says, we'll split it down the middle. It's corrupt. Such behavior is blasphemy. Nietz Hashem. Person has to be judges. When you don't have a mishpat, you don't have a system of mishpat, then it's the worst where the whole world comes to an end. Let's see the Chazal again inside. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Noshel, Rabbi Yosef, Lid Oimer, also L'Oslo Adol L'Dayem L'Tsoya L'Fasher Bein Bali Hadinim Mishabon L'Bezin. It is forbidden for them to make a compromise that is incorrect. V'Chol HaBotzeya, anyone makes a compromise that is illegal, Harei Zechaita, he's a sinner. V'Chol HaMevarech, HaMeshabech Es HaBotzeya, and that's really what the pasuk over here means. Anyone that praises, they give honor to judges that are corrupt, who have issued compromise that are illegal, Hareze Mino Eitzi is guilty of blasphemy. Yalze Nemar, Boitzea Bereich, a person that praises corrupt judges who make compromises that are illegal, Nietz Hashem. Ela, now these are the words, now these are the very powerful words, these words are words. Yikoiv hadin esohar. And recall, right? You always have the expression, we don't suffer fools gladly. This thing is, I remember my father used to serve occasionally on the RCA Besdin. And he got to know a lot of the Dayanim. Some of the Dayanim who did things. So I remember once I asked my father about a certain person, one, and he was a Dayan. So he told me, this guy, he said to me, Yikoiv hadin esohar. That's what he said. Yikoiv hadin esohar. This person doesn't deal with nonsense. This, in other words, you're saying this person is straight. Not only straight. It's like it's more than just being straight. It's like he'll go after you. He will go. He'll dig his claws into you. This is the halacha. I don't want to hear any philosophy. And that's the end. You're wrong, or you're right. You lose, you win. No nonsense. No nonsense. This is called Yikoif Hadin Es. Let the law penetrate the mountain. It can just go right to the mountain. Nothing is going to stop me. Is this the halacha? I'm fearless. I'm not afraid of the rich, the famous, the politicians. This is the halacha. That's the halacha. Too bad for you. Whatever the consequences are. Okay. So Yikoif Hadin Es Ahar. Remember, it says, what? Call it as you see it. Call it as you see it. Rabbi Meir Omer Lo Nemar Beitzeya Ella Kineged Yehuda. Okay, now we have an entirely different interpretation. The word Beitzeya, it's Kineged Yehuda, Shenemar, Vayoyim Yehuda Ella Echav. Ma Betza, Prophet. Ki Naharege Sochinu. What profit will there be if we murder our brothers?
What do we gain?
V'chol Mavarechas Yehuda, Hare Zeh Minoetz. Anyone that praises Yehuda, he's a blasphemer. V'alze nemar, u'boitzea berech. Yehuda is the boitzea, because he said the word betza. It's not the same word. It's betza, prophet. Nietz Hashem. In other words, now, this is a very complicated sugya. If you take the pasuk without any of the mefarshim, it's a horrible statement. What did Yehuda say? Where's the money? If you take the pasuk at a raw view of the pasuk, here we have a brother Yehuda, yeah, Yosef, and we're going to kill him. He's a dead man. Yehuda says, "Where's the money? We could make some money off him. I don't care about his life. I don't care if it's better for him to die or to live." I don't care if he'll suffer or not suffer. It's irrelevant. Sometimes there is such a thing that it's better to die. There is such a principle. Now we don't... What? Oh, so... Okay. This is where we're getting... gets very, very delicate. So let's discuss this. Look, today, Baruch Hashem, we live in a generation that we're no child left behind, no Jew left behind. There's this principle all over what the guy do, like, you know, in education. It used to be, I don't know what's going on today, but it used to be today education is down. Exactly, it's all left behind. The corona came along and destroyed the world. But it used to be, you know, a big push for education, K-12, you know, there used to be a big, big push. And no child should be left behind. In the guy, by the guy, this is a Goyisha principle, a Goyisha political agenda. And that very much, you know, what the Goyim do, we do. Jews were traditionally, until this generation, they were Democrats. Because Democrats, you know, they're very into, they gave us social security, they gave food stamps, they gave us, always the underdog. Mm-hmm. And Jews were always persecuted, so until the recent times, Jews were always Democrats, because they always felt for the underdogs. Okay, there wasn't this left-leaning apikorsis and a hate of oneself that existed among the Democrats. The Jews very much identified with the underdog.
Saying, who was it?
Said that Jews live like Rockefellers and vote like Puerto Ricans. Saying very good. Well, not everyone lives like a Rockefeller. I don't know if you can say that anymore. It depends who. Most people are poor. It's unfortunate that you know the super, super rich ruin it for everyone. They live a certain lifestyle, that everyone wants to copy it, but the facts are most people are poor. That's the reality. Most people struggle very much and suffer from digas. In any event, okay, today we have this attitude, but years ago people did not have that attitude. It was a different world. Look at the time of the Crusades. The Crusaders were coming. They knew about what they would do to their children. So what did the parents do to their children? They slaughtered them. They murdered their children. The Jewish parents, they took their children and they slaughtered their own children. Why? If we don't slaughter you, what's going to happen? They're going to take you. They're going to take you to a missionary. They get a convent. They're going to, you'll become shmad. So this is not what we believe in. So therefore the parents, they took out knives and they slaughtered their children, exactly what Avraham was going to do to Yitzchak. This is the Farish in the Kinais. It's all over the place. Today you say this to someone who never heard of this, they look at you like you're out from Mars, this, to hear such a thing like this. Because we don't understand, it was a different world, it was an entirely different world. That's the way it was. So they looked at the good of the person. If we're going to let the situation continue to exist in this fashion, this is what's going to happen. So they cared about the ultimate result, and if that required that a person should be put to death, it's impossible for us to understand. They did it. So look at Yosef. Yosef was thrown into the pit. So he's going to die. He's going to starve to death in this pit. There's no water, there's no food, there are snakes, there are scorpions. It's just a matter of time. Give him an hour or two, he'll be dead. Now along comes Yehuda, and Yehuda says, Mabetza, where's the money? We can make a couple of bucks. We can make a couple of bucks over here. Now I'll give you an example. Someone told me a horror story yesterday, and a couple of months ago, I was in a certain place, and then it was a boy, and the boy had an allergic reaction. You know they have the EpiPen. He had an allergic reaction, and he never had this before. He had before, and parents didn't know what to do. And okay, let's get better, call them a doctor. The doctor says, go to the pharmacy, get this medication, get this. They went to the pharmacy, they got it, didn't work. And it wasn't getting better, and it was getting worse. The doctor said, you must go to the emergency room immediately. So the parents took him to an emergency care center. I'm not gonna tell you where it is.
No,
it,
not the emergency room, an urgent care.
An urgent care center that was local. They rushed to an urgent care center. Mm-hmm. Comes in, they look at him, they say, okay, this is above our ability. They called Hatzalah. I'm not telling you which urgent care center this is. Hatzalah comes. Hatzalah knew exactly what to do. Hatzalah was infinitely better trained than the people in the urgent care center, this particular urgent care center. I'm telling you so for a reason, we got a point. So then the Hatzalah says, okay, we must start on an IV immediately. They take out their equipment. They were mamish. They were there in a second. They pulled a paramedic. They knew exactly what to do. Okay, they're about to put into the IV and start. The urgent care center made a scene and said, no, we do it. We're going to put in the IV. They refused to allow Hatzalah to put in the IV. The Hatzalah guy was, I was there. That's we got it in our hands. We got to get moving right now. We do this every day. Let's get going here. No, we do it. It's our premises. And they basically forced Hatzalah to stand down, and they put in the IV. And then Hatzalah administered all the medication anyway. Anyway, he did everything, Hatzalah. And then they took him to the hospital. Everything turned out. The kid was totally fine. No problem. All right. No one thought about it. Now, a few months later, the insurance bills start rolling in. The insurance receipts rolling in. This urgent care center got $15,000 for putting in the IV.
That's what they wanted.
If Hatzalah would have done it, they would have got nothing. They would have got money for free. Hatzalah charges now. Hatzalah does it in a very delicate way.
Insurance company, not the person.
Right. Also with the insurance company, but Hatzalah has a different agenda. It's a much more delicate approach. They need the money. Listen, if there's money, there's money. No one's denying you money. It became, after a few phone calls, it became clear as day. The reason why the urgent care center, it was because 15th, their eyes were rolling with dough. The agenda was not the patient. The Hatzalah people were more experienced. They didn't even know what to do. The urgent care center. The Hatzalah people, they were trained. It's a matter of training. Okay,
so
matter of training.
Why don't you want to tell us which center?
I don't want to say which center. I want
to
say which center. And
the
parents. The parents. The parents. Maybe the parents are wrong. Listen, everyone has their opinion on everything. We live in a world like it was just all about money. That's what happened here. We brought the kid in because our child, we were in a panic. We brought the kid in, and the people around us, it was just all about money. All about money. It wasn't about the kids' benefits, it was just about money. And like, it really made a roshim on them. Like, you know, watch out. Watch out. You know, you be careful. You talk about people are abused. Everyone's talking about abuse, abuse, abuse. There's a lot of different types of abuse out there. Yehuda is the ultimate abuser in this situation at face value. At face value. Mabetza. Mabetza. Here we have this person. We made a decision that he's an existential threat to the future of Klal Yisrael. So what are we going to do? We're going to kill him. So kill him. So kill him. That would be in his best interest.
The ideology should be he should die better than to be exposed to...
Exactly. To send him to the Erev HaSaaretz. The Erev HaSaaretz was a lot worse than anything we can possibly imagine. Well, it wasn't Mitzrayim. And okay, we don't understand this today. Today this would seem absurd. But there's no fact that in Jewish history this was a halachic principle that sometimes it's better to die than it is to be spiritually destroyed. And the Crusades is an explicit proof to this principle, where that was the halacha, where parents actually slaughter their children and allow the Christians to take them and convert them into Christians. The parents actually, Psak Piske Halacha of Gedol Yisrael, they slaughter their children. In Yosef's situation, the same thing would have been to his ultimate benefit. And all of a sudden, Yehuda says, hey, I don't care about what's good for him, what's good for him, his spiritual, his neshama. I don't care. Where's the money? Where's the money? Ma betza. Now, what are you going to say? You're going to say what Rabbi Chol said. That's not what Rashi says. It's not what Rashi says. Mm-hmm. Rashi says that Yehuda couldn't care less about the money, couldn't care less, but he was using it as a tactic to save his life so that he would not end up in Egypt, so that later he would be able to rescue him, Lahashiva Yalaviv, to bring him back home.
Wait.
Here you right. Reuven was thrown to the bar. Reuven, correct. But Yehuda also to a degree. Okay, it says what you said about Reuven, but it says it also about to a lesser degree about Yehuda. Okay, you have to analyze. Okay, whatever the case is, it's an ugly story. Mm-hmm. We suffer from this story ad hayoyim hazeh. And at face value, without going looking into what Rashi says, the Mamorich, what exactly was Yehuda's real kavana? The bottom line is, to the observer who just reads the story and hears such a statement of Mabetza, where's the money? Where's the money?
I would explain it different. When he says Mabetza, he meant to make a pshara. We have to get rid of him, but you don't have to kill him. Let's what we are going to do is just send him away.
Okay, you're saying compromise.
Yonatan ben Shaul was supposed to be killed because he ate Huavar at Hashpua and he ate
Yaro Sadvash.
By money, they pay money. That's the pshara, that you can do something like that. And that's it. I knew a case between husband and wife. There was a divorce case, and there was another the pshara to do. What to do with the kids?
Okay. You're right. Now we know. Today,
pshara is good. It's not always bad.
Right, okay, you're right. But if Chazal over here are coming along and saying that in this particular case, now, I hear what you say. You want to say is that when it says over there the word Mabetza, in the case of Yehuda, he's saying Mabetza. But see, how do you get into the pasuk? Ma, where is the compromise? Mabetza ki naharoy gesochinu. I mean, in this pasuk, in the pasuk here in Tehillim, you can say Botzeya Berech, a person who praises the compromiser, Nietz Hashem. But it's a very forced, it would appear to be a very forced translation in the case of Yehuda to say where Yehuda says, Mabetza, ki naroge sochinu, v'chisinu es damo. Where's the compromise? It doesn't really fit into the context, that translation. I don't know. Maybe he's saying it does.
He had it in mind.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit in, though, the translation. Where's the compromise? That we're not trying to make a compromise over here. I mean, I don't know. I hear what you're saying. But on a
this
very...
This is a different shot. Not what Seiya is compromise, but Seiya from my betza.
Money. A person that praises those people who pursue... I'm trying to say upshot a little bit different. I hear what you're saying, Avkalman. But let's first finish up this thought. This thought is, there are people out there in this world who everything is money. Everything is money. Whatever you want to do, there's a body to bury. There's a body to bury. And the chapel says, we're not going to do it unless you give us $20,000. And the people say, we don't have so much money. We'll do it. I will give you now $15,000. And we'll fight about the other $5,000. But right now we can't. No, the body will stay here for a week in the freezer. We're not going to do it until we get our... And we're not going to release the body either. It's in our possession. You can't go anywhere else. There are sometimes, obviously, you can't generalize. Every situation is different. Everyone's entitled to make a parnasa. Everyone's entitled to what's theirs. But sometimes things take on a life of itself where the issue is the money becomes a tool of abuse. And it's already outside the realm of what's right and what's wrong. You need money. I'm chayishol tshichan parnasa. Okay, you know, children need children. You know, you have a kid in school, you got to pay tuition. Okay, and you don't pay tuition. So, you know, how do you deal with the story?
There was a problem of money, but it was very easy. The problem was the rest of it.
I know it's a problem. Tomorrow,
how do you do pshara with that? And so, but the Beit Din, I knew that the Beit Din said, we'll do the best, what's good for the kids, not for you two. You can fight it, each other, whatever it is, but what's better for the kids. So sometimes Beit Din can do pshara in a very nice way, and everybody was happy. Everybody is happy.
Okay, it depends on the situation.
In money, of course.
That's what I'm trying to say over here. We're trying to suggest over here is uvotzeya berech, a person who praises those people who view everything in life in terms of dollars and cents, and nothing else has any meaning. Torah is nothing more than a business. A shul is just a business. How much can you make from the Mishra Berachs? How much can you make from this? Your calling in life is, you know, it's a good business. You go into the yeshiva business, you know, you exempt from tax. Like today, like a caterer today. Today, every single, we'll discuss every single catering hall in Brooklyn and probably the whole New York, do you notice, is all associated with a religious institution. Every single one. There's almost no exceptions. Why? Because if you're part of a religious institution, you don't have to pay for garbage removal. And you don't have to pay for water. If you have to pay for garbage removal, when you make a wedding, someone makes a wedding in Chinka, or any place, Atedes Avram, or you name it, wherever you want to go, Teferis Mordechai, wherever you go, if you would have to pay for garbage removal and pay for water, the bill, the cost of a wedding would be double the price. The cost of private garbage removal is astronomical. The cost of how much amount of water they use, and there are probably other things. Oh, you're a religious institution.
No
water bill. There's no. I remember I was once in Tar V'Das in the summer many years ago, and there was the toilet. One of the toilets exploded, and it was like a fire hydrant. Yeah, it wasn't causing a flood because the water somehow was able to go down to the drain. I don't know, but it was an enormous amount of water that was being wasted. And the person who runs the yeshiva, I ran to tell him. So he says, he was very calm. That's exactly what he said. He says, is there flooding? Is the yeshiva being flooded? He says, no, it's under control, but you know, it's just the water is gushing. He says, it's okay. We don't pay water bills here. There's no emergency. We'll take care of it eventually. We don't pay water bills. What? I'm sorry? Yeah, well, what are you going to do? It's broken. We got to call the plumber. We're going to call the plumber. But don't call Hatzala. It's not a, if they were paying the water bill, boy, would they ever get a plumber there within 10 seconds to make to fix it. We're not paying the water bill, so we'll get at our leisure. I was like so shocked. I was so shocked how he said it to me. He said it to me in a half-joking way, okay, but it wasn't a joke either. He wasn't
I remember
any...
Remember the Trump apartments in South Brooklyn, you know, the electric was free. So all the air conditioners were going...
Non-stop. On the Lower East Side, when I was a kid, on the Lower East Side, there was a flat, you could pay for electricity. So people would turn on the air conditioner in the spring and would not turn it off until the fall. Go to Florida, the air conditioners, I'm not joking, this is a fact, everyone knows this. You in the apartments, you just paid your rent, and included the utilities. The air conditioners were on the whole summer nonstop. And they cut it out of there. They came, they installed a meter in every single apartment. Because, you know, people just took advantage, right? There are a lot of things like this. But over here, if everything is about money, everything is about ma betza. Ki nahara yesachinu v'chisinu es. Anyone that behaves like that, where everything in life is just about dollars and cents, then... Niyetz Hashem. You learn in Koilo. Why do you learn in Koilo? They pay you this amount of money. Why do I go to this Koilo? They pay more money. Not that Koilo. Why do you take this job? They pay more money.
How about this Koilo?
What?
We don't get paid here?
There's something outside called adopt a Koilo, right? Still waiting for someone to adopt us. Why adopt a Koilo there to show? I need adopt us over here.
That's what I said.
How come no one wants to adopt us? Okay. Look at the ego. When Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come down from Shemayim, it was late. So there are a lot of good candidates out there. Aaron Akoyim, he was unbelievable. Charismatic, dynamic, yet alamailas. There was Chor. There were many very great people they could have taken. Who did they take to be their leader? An egel. An animal. The likeness of an animal. That's the best you can do? That's the best you can do? Teretz is. He's from the outside. Well, you're not familiar with. Familiarity breeds contempt. Okay? What you're familiar with, no. You want something, from another world. Yeah, someone has a British accent. A British accent. I went to the Aguda convention, so they had a guest speaker from Britain. Guest speaker, so he's a real clever guy. He says that he's in a beautiful British accent. And he said, I have an advantage here, all the speakers, because I have a British accent. Mm-hmm. They tell me that in America, if you have a British accent, so he said, even if you read the phone book, it's inspiring. Okay, let's go further. So this, I think, is a real, okay, obviously, Rabbi Kalman, you're saying very good, you're saying another Mahalach, maybe what you're saying is the correct shot, maybe what I'm saying, the Gemara, is incorrect. But over here, the Gemara brings down another parish of Boitzea Berech. We cannot ignore the reality that the word Boitzea is Betza, Ma Betza, Ki Naharoi Yesochinu, that we will kill our brother. And the word Betza, in that context, Lufi Peshuto means money. And this Chazal is connecting the two together. And obviously, it's subject to interpretation what the Chazal is trying to say. So you may be saying the Pshat, and I may be saying more of a Drush. Well, be as it may, the Jewish would then be is that it, I believe the point is a very, very true point. And unfortunately, we've all come across this many times in our life where, unfortunately, religion is abused by money. It's all about money. Money, and if a person is the Boitzea Berech, a person who praises those who turn everything in life into money, that's blasphemy. That's not a Jewish way. There's no question that people have to be paid properly, have to be paid on time, have to be paid well, and have to be paid with dignity. But if everything is about money and it's not about the cause, it's not about the mission, the sacred mission, then that's blasphemy. That goes against Keneged Kol HaTorah Kula. And you know, a lot of things in life, they start out L'Shem Shemayim. A lot of organizations, L'Shem Shemayim, for real. And then, you know what happens? You know, it's just a sad reality. And then they go 50 years later. It's just a business. It turns into a business. And you lose the whole goal, the whole purpose of what you went into this business
for. Usually it's like that. But the only thing that bothers me, because I know the character of Yehuda was such a tzaddik.
100%! We're now looking.
Yehuda, and it's hard to believe.
100%! But it's not Yehuda. It's people who abuse Yehuda. There are people out there who take other people and they use them.
Yeah.
They make them into like they say they have a different Gedolei Yisrael. There are a lot of people that take the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and they use them as a model for an ideology. That's not true. They go and they say he promoted this. He represents. It's not true. People take Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitcher. He's probably the most abused person of them all. Really, Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitcher. Rav Kefet always talks about this. Is they take him, and people who are corrupt, in every sense of the word, they create a new ideology, and this is what he stood for. No, he didn't stand for that. What are you talking about? What are you going? Oh, but he said this. He said that. You're taking it out of context. What he said. You're taking out of context. What he wrote. You're taking it out of context.
Maybe he said the shit at him. You want something? So let me suggest another suggestion.
This is a very common thing. Where they take you take
let
a gadol. And you abuse them. You use them you mold them in your image. You mold them in your image, and people are doing that to Yehuda. Yehuda, the Torah records him saying, "Ma betza kinar gesachinu." Those who are maminim are like you. They know that Yehuda did 100% l'shem shemayim. He had a kavana, a very holy stray kavana, and he had to resort to this technique in order to save his life. You have to study all the Mamori Chazal, all the Midrashim, to understand what Chazal say about Yehuda. But there are many people that have no patience to read all the Mamori Chazal and to study. And they just take Yehuda. Look what it says in the Pasuk. I used to read the Jewish Week years. We used to get it for free in the house. There were some things they wrote there in the Jewish Week that are just mind-boggling. And they took Psukim. There were some articles about, I don't even say what I'm thinking. I remember one particular article about David and Yehoinasan. Use your imagination. What they said about David and Yehoshua, and they're quoting Psukim. What? This is the ultimate abuser. To go take something and to mold it in such a corrupt, despicable way. Okay, they talk about Hashem. Is Hashem a male? Is a female? This is Mishagas. What are you doing? You have an agenda. You have an agenda. And you go and you find something soft, a soft target. And you go and you take that target to manipulate. This is Maisim B'chol Yom. And here, when it comes to Yehuda, he's also a victim. Yehuda, he says something. My bad. People don't want to go and know the MS. They want to go. They see the words of the pasuk. It's a soft target, and they go and then they take advantage. The whole Torah is like this. The Yishak Yaakov L'Rachel. Yaakov sees Rachel. He kisses her. What's going on over here? Today a boy goes to a wedding, he sees a nice girl and he kisses her. So people go learn. You have no patience to learn what it says. So you go and you'll become an abuser. This is my simcholim. Okay, let's go further. Next pasuk. Pasuk dal rasha ki goiva apa bal yidroish rasha. In the height of his anger. Now here we are introducing over here another concept over here is that wicked people get angry. Tzaddikim don't get angry. Tzaddikim, they learn how to control their anger. A rasha, and not only do they get angry, ki go vah apamapike, in the height of their anger, in the apex of their anger, bal yidrosh. they refuse to seek the truth. We'll have to see the commentators for more precision what this means. Ein elokim kol mezim ha'isaf. Now this is something which unfortunately you see today by very left-wing people. The very left-wing people is not only do they not believe in God, but it becomes a religion not to believe in God. It's their kol mezim ha'isaf are their plans. They sit and plot and calculate and plan the whole day that there is no God. Listen, you don't want to believe in God? Baruch Hashem, you live in America, it's a free country, do whatever you want, don't bother anyone. But to go and to persuade people, to convince people, to promote agendas, to eradicate morality, religion, to lobby in government, to propose to have cunning laws. People would know. It's amazing this country. They go and they propose these laws, these $1 trillion, build back better. Oh. So what's in there? The pork that's in these things are astonishing. Astonishing. Some of the things that they slip in there, and this is called exactly mizimaisav. These are plans, and these plans are many of them are all what it says here is to ein elokim, remove God. Not just God, remove authority, remove morality. What? God and morality is the same thing. Amichol is giving us, it's true. And it's not just, okay, I don't believe. Okay, so you don't believe, good for you, you don't believe.
Live and let live.
No, live and let live, right? No. There's a certain, over here, David HaMelech already 3,000 years ago understood the human condition better than we'll ever understand even a fraction of the human condition. And people who are non-believers, there's no such thing as a non-believer who is live and let live. Doesn't exist.
That's not really true. You know, most people just, you know, drift. But there is a small...
A small?
Yes.
I think it's more than small because
but
I think
influential.
I think
it's like everything else. There's the tail wagging the dog. You know, there's this fringe group.
The extreme.
Everyone deep down knows that there's a God. Deep down knows. When a person just lives a lifestyle, okay, you know what? I made a decision in life. There is no God. He can't live with that decision. It bothers him because he deep down subconsciously, the human condition is such, he's living in it's a contradiction. Because he knows that his life is a lie. So the only way he can satisfy is by reinforcing that there is no God, to uproot the conscious from his, to uproot it. How do you do that? You go into action. You go into action. You work. You're mizimoisav. Okay, mizimoisav is rationalization. That's right. The word mizim is a plan. A plan means rationalization. You can't just be parv. See, even though we don't hear about it, it's part of the human condition. You cannot.
What do you mean we don't hear about it? That's all we hear.
No,
about,
we don't hear about it from the masses. We hear about it from, like you're saying, from the yechidim. But
the majority don't hear. You hear the noisy minority. That's right.
But the truth is, it's not just the minority. It's everyone. Anyone who has chosen a lifestyle where God is not part of his life, completely remove God from his life. He's living, deep down, it irritates him to no end. And he has to struggle, he has to work, he has to mizim himself, call what it says in the pasuk. Okay, let's read what it says in the pasuk.
I know what you're saying, but, you know, you've just destroyed the concept of Tinok Shenishma.
No, I don't think I destroyed that Tinok Shenishma.
Because, you know, people who... They just don't know.
They don't know.
And they don't act on it.
There's a difference between not knowing and deciding to reject what you do know.
Okay, fine.
Those people, they don't know. But there are many people who know and they make a conscious decision to reject what they know. There are many of those type of people. There are people, you're right, they know nothing. They don't know from nothing. We're talking about very basic non-Jews. Talk about a non-Jew. Does the average non-Jew understand the principle of God? I think so. We live in a monotheistic world. Christianity and Islam, Judaism has revealed there is a God, and you can't avoid that reality that there is knowledge that there is a creator. And yet
there is. Think most people accept that there is a God, however they define it?
I think a lot of people struggle with this.
You don't believe that?
I think a lot of people are very distracted, and those that think struggle very, very much, and are conflicted, because if they're not, if they don't have a plan of action, a place to express themselves, and they're swept away, they're conflicted. You can't say that today. Look, time of Avraham Avinu. How many people were there in the world? I don't know. Who knows? Who knows how many people were in the world at that time? Do people in the world know of a one God? Did they even know? They were brought up that there are many gods, a pantheon. There are many gods. There's the God of the sun, the moon, the stars, good, bad, fire, water. Did they even know of the concept that there can be one God? I don't know. It seems not.
No.
The whole world believed in the pantheon to some degree. They didn't believe Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, was unique to one person, to Avraham Avinu. And he slowly, slowly taught the world about this principle until he succeeded where, look, in the world today, there's Yishmael, and there's Esav, and there is the Bechir, is the chosen nation of Klal Yisrael. Now their understanding of God is nothing connected to our understanding of Hashem. But there is a basic raw appreciation in God we trust. Okay, whatever that means.
Or as God the Creator.
And you can't go say that they don't never heard of this concept. You can't say that the average guy walking in never heard of the thing called God. They never the dollar. What does it say on the dollar bill? What does it say? Who's the picture there? Oh, George Washington. And what is it? In God we trust. Who's that? Who's God? Who's that? You can't go tell that the average person in this world doesn't know what that means. So how come yet they live a life and they're unembarrassed to say I'm an atheist? So how do they live with themselves? If they know that there's something called a God, that's emes. Divrei emes nikarim. There's a principle in life. Emes, you can smell. The Melech HaMashiach, when he will come, it says he will judge people by smelling them. It doesn't mean he's going to sniff. It means you talk to a person for 2 minutes, for 1 minute, for 10 seconds, you know what this guy's all about. You can sense emes. Every single living creature in this world was given by Hashem a gift of sensing emes. And emes koi shikro loikoi. Atheism, apikorisis loikoi. Emes koi. Every guy in this world knows, senses the emes. There's a rebellion in the shop. So how come yet they go and they make a decision to reject it? No, not a kasha, the Yetzirah. But that decision that they make to reject bothers them. And the more they think about it, the more they're bothered. And they have a choice to make. Either they're going to accept that there is a God and serve him in some shape or form, whatever that may mean from their level, or it means no. I have to reinforce my rejection of God. And the reinforce of the rejection is what it says here in the Pasuk, Baal Yidrosh, Ein Elokim Kol Mizimoysaf. As long as they continue to make that decision, it's not just a decision that you can make and you can be passive. You're going to have to work the rest of your life, Kol Mizimoysaf, to reinforce that decision until you accept the reality of the emes. Let's see the Mitzvah Stavit. This is psychology.
But it's interesting. Chumash Bereshit, toward the end, Yosef was teaching Mitzrayim that there is Elohim on their own tab. The whole time, Elohim, 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 Elohim. And what Paro said, Mi Elohim Asher Shema Bekolo. Suddenly, boom, the whole thing is over. Gamar. En Elohim.
Very good. You connect this to Pai. Very good. You connect this story to Yosef Mitzrayim. It's true. Okay, let's see the Mitzudos. The Mitzudos that we pass it down. Ki gova. Kasher gova chamosa al mi choshev shein. When he becomes arrogant, al mi choshev, on any individual, choshev, he thinks, shein mi doresh b'masov. Now, the way the Mitzudos learns the pasuk is, Baal Yidrash. Okay, it's a complex interpretation of the pasuk. He thinks to himself, there's no accountability. I will do my crime and Baal Yidrash. Nobody will seek out justice for the victim. One more time. Rasha kigova apo. When the Rasha gets angry and the Rasha proceeds to inflict harm, to commit crimes, to abuse people, he says to himself, I'm going to get away with it. Basically, the translation of the word Baal Yidrosh means, I will get away with murder. Nobody will come to seek out my punishment, my accountability. I'm going to get away with it. V'chol machshavei savhu, all of his thoughts the entire day are Ein Elokim. He's obsessed. He's obsessed with Ein Elokim. Kol ba'olam lefroya loyal masav, to punish him for his evil deeds. Let's see Rashi. Rashi pasik dalit rasha kigova rasha. Okay, rasha kigova apo shu giva ruach. He's arrogant. Okay, he's arrogant and he lifts up, he stretches out his face and his anger in his arrogance. Bal Yidroish kol mezima yisav, oymois loy. Bal Yidroish HaKadosh Baruch Hu kol mashe e'eseh. Exactly what the Mitzvot David said. The Bal Yidroish is going on Hashem. Hashem is not going to seek out punishment for my victims. Ki ein mishpat, ein elukim les din. Okay, now, over here, he says over here an entirely different interpretation. According to the Rashi, the word Elohim is not Kodesh. According to the Mitzudos David, the Naftimina, when you write, I mean, today, no one really writes a Sefer Tilim on cloth and parchment. But if a Sefer today were to write Tilim on parchment with the Kedusha of a Sefer Kodesh, there would be a nafkamina between Rashi and the Mitzudas David. When he says the word, when he writes Elohim, does he have to have kavana, say the words, L'shem Kiddushas Hashem? Must he first
go... They just wrote a cloth in Borough Park. It's read every day at 1:30. They have an online site. They wrote the whole...
Tilim.
Tilim.
A Sefer. Okay. So you have to ask the Sefer. When he wrote the word Elohim here, did he go to the mikvah first? Did he say L'shem Kiddushas Hashem? According to the Mitzvah David, he must do so. And if he does not do so, the Sefer is possible. Because he learned Elohim means there is no God. Elohim refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. According to Rashi, he does not need to go to mikvah. He does not need to say L'shem Kiddushas Hashem, because the word Elohim is not Kodesh, it is mundane. Ain, there is no authority in this world. Les din v'les dayan. There is no accountability. It's not referring to Hashem. Like you have, Lo yelecha Elohim acherim al ponoi. No one there says Elohim there means it's Kodesh. It means Avodah Zarah. What?
It could apply, though.
What do you mean it could apply?
You know, the ultimate justice.
Okay, a little bit. But according to Rashi, Ein Elohim les din v'les dayan. There is no authority. Elohim means mishpat. There is no accountability, no authority. Call me Z myself. That's all he says. Okay, so we have here the Rashi and the Mitzvah. Let's review outside Rashi and Rashi. The Mitzvah says the Pashat Basis, Rosh Hashanah Gapo. He in his arrogance and his anger, and as he proceeds, doesn't say that part in the Pasuk. As he proceeds to commit crimes, he says, Bal Yidrosh, I'll never get caught. No one will ever come after me. And then he says, Ein Elokim Kol Mizi Myself, there is no God. Hashem does not exist. Rashi, the beginning of the pasuk is identical to what he says in the mitzvah, but at the end of the pasuk he says something a little bit different. Ein Elokim, there is no authority in this world. There's no accountability. There's no accountability. He's not using the word Elokim as reference to Hashem. He means the midah of mishpat that comes from Hashem, that does not exist in this world whatsoever. As long as you know how to commit, you watch enough movies, enough crime scene investigation episodes. They still have that show on?
Yeah.
They still have that show on?
Yeah. They started a new one.
Woo! How many years already is that show on? 25 years already? Must be the longest show ever. Why is the world so obsessed with that show?
Which show?
Crime scene investigation. Everyone's guilty.
The wicked are punished.
That's true.
Okay.
Satisfaction you get. I read mysteries. I like at the end.
The satisfaction you get in justice. In justice.
In real life, it's not true.
That's a very powerful thing, the satisfaction in mishpat. People, how you're saying over here, a very powerful var. People enjoy it because there is satisfaction in mishpat, in mishpat. Fascinating. But people always attempting to commit the perfect crime, and they think that they can get away with it. You can't get away with it. Hashem is watching. And the Rosh says, I'm planning how to commit the perfect crime. That can only be true if there's no God. If there is a God, there's no such thing. No such thing as ever.
I think a lot of people believe in Hashem, but they don't believe that he's involved in everything.
Hashkacha Pratis.
Yeah. They believe in Hashem.
Okay, never mind Dreyfus. But even that, every non-Jew has to be at some point in time in his life. Even a non-Jew, at some point in their life, they have to realize a moment of Hashkacha Pratis. Yeah, it can be. Okay, obviously, the different levels. Every person is on a different level. You can't compare one to the other. But Hashem created this world, and Hashem did not put the Yisod of the Ramchal. Hashem did not put people into this world to bring upon them harm. Hashem gave every person, every living creature, Jew or non-Jew, the tools to enjoy this world. Oylam Chesed Yibaneh. Hashem did not set up man for failure. That's a horrible thing. They always nechinuch. They always talk about nechinuch in training teachers in a classroom. Do not set up your students for failure. You have to create goals that are realistic. You have to have a curriculum. You have to know what you're dealing with and create an environment where they have the ability to achieve. If you're going to go and you're going to create an environment where they're going to for sure fail, you're setting them up to fail, and that is a crime. You don't belong in the classroom. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate teacher. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world. The emuna is, Olam Chesed Yibaneh. Hashem made a world to do Chesed. He's not here to go and cause people to fail. Hashem is hiding himself, and he wants man to find him, and every single person, Hashem gives him those opportunities, and he knows it, and a person, every living creature, has that ability. Okay, let's go further.
As an educator, I have to discuss.
By the way,
Wait, one second.
Did you review the people who want to go?
I can't do this. I can't do that. It's not right. What were you saying, Mr. Merlis?
I'm just saying, when you set a standard, a goal that they should achieve, that it's in conflict with what the school system wants or what the standards are.
Then you have a failed system. Want. You have a dysfunctional school then.
No, then you have conflict.
Have conflict is dysfunctional.
When you have region standards and the kids can't do it, but you want them to be.
Welcome to the world of Jewish education. Okay, this is the whole world is the never find the solution. Let's go further. Okay, let's move ahead. Now, Rav Kalman, I'm sorry, because we have a problem over here. Okay, Rav Kalman, let's say something. We have a problem. The problem over here is I don't have my computer with me. I left it somewhere. I have to, so when you speak, the people in the room can't hear what you're saying, and they're thirsty to hear what you're saying, but they can't hear you, so it creates an unpleasant situation.
So until
tomorrow, we're gonna try to. No, you can say things, of course, but until tomorrow, we get back my computer. We'll have to just leave Mamaya a little bit of the comments.
You didn't go back to the show together.
What? No, I went to a wedding there last night. I didn't even go to the wedding. I went to the wedding for 5 minutes. Then I went to visit my brother, and I came back. The wedding was already over. So I went home. No, someone, whatever. Nothing. It's good.
I didn't see a message later.
It's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Another time. Okay, let's go further. Let's move ahead. We have a few more minutes, and then we'll learn something about tefillin. Let's see over here. So if we learn over the Mitzvot Rashi, let's go now to the next part. The next pasuk is. Here, what's the place over here? One second. Okay. Let me make sure I got it. Okay. Pasuk hey, Yachilu Drachav Becholeis. His ways are successful. The word Yachilu Drachav, if I'm not mistaken, means he is successful. The rush over here again. This game. Remember the hakdama to this mizmar. The hakdama to this mizmar we learned is that this is an analysis, a philosophical analysis of the principle of tzaddik v'raloi rasha v'toiv loy. So we're describing over here the success of the rasha. Yachilu d'rachav. Don't think for one second that it's not true. People say, oh no, it's not really true. The Rishon, they're not successful. They're not happy. It's baloney. They're very successful and they're very happy with themselves. You'll tell them, people say, oh, the wicked people, they're not really happy. Don't worry, they're very happy. Watch them. Yachilu d'rachav b'chol eis. they are successful always. Becholes. They never lose. They never lose. Everything that they touch, they succeed. Moroim mishpatecha minegdo. It is far removed Hashem's justice from the wicked people. This pasuk really says it all. When you want to describe, what does it mean, Rosha v'toiv loy? What does that mean? Perish Rashi. David HaMelech is giving you a Perish Rashi. It means they're successful all the time, every time, no exceptions. Justice? What are you talking about? Mishpat, someone's going to summons them, someone's going to say a bad word about them, summons them to court? Never. It is, Moroim is a very powerful word. It means it is far removed, your judgment, minegdo. Call it Tzorov Yofiach Bohem. The wicked people, they just blow on their enemies and they disappear. They're given a koyach. Hashem gives wicked people incredible power to succeed. And it's literally lemala miderech hateva. The Gemara says, when you see a Rasha and he's doing very well, stay far, far away. Don't think for one second you're going to come, I'm a tzaddik, I have emes, I'm a Talmud Chacham, you're a Shemayim, and this mishpat. No. You don't know anything how this world works. In this world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu at times gives shlita of this world to the most wicked, wicked people. And the only way you can save yourself is by don't get in their way. Just hide in the basement until they pass. Because if you'll confront them, you can be armed with every weapon in the world, you will lose. Because this is the way Hashem made the world, Rasha v'toiv lo, yochilu d'rachav, their ways, their evil ways are successful, b'choles. Moroim mishpatecha minedo. You can take him to court? Really? You're going to take him to court? You think you're going to win in court? The judge will decide in his favor before you even blink, even though it is thoroughly corrupt. And if he doesn't like you, the Russia, he will just blow on you and you will perish. The goal is, when you see people like this, just get out of their way. They're very dangerous. Mitzudas David, Yachilu al shabachol eis yatzliach b'rachav mishpatecha misulok nimenu. Here there was word misulok, completely removed from them. Uvahafachamu etes ma'abed esanav. They just have to blow and they win. Talk about Hitler, yamach shmo v'zichro. In the beginning of the war, it's astonishing his success. Astonishing. Nothing, one nation after another. Just literally what it says over here. Didn't lose a battle until the tide turned, until how many years did it take? It took like, how many years? Like 5-6 years? Yeah, whole Holocaust, the whole war, 6 years. What? Till the very end. It's unbelievable. And therefore, you just don't get in their way. Don't. Like ACP.
They spent years arming themselves and training for 6-7 years before
in advance.
They started. And nobody saw that coming.
Who would imagine? Who would imagine?
Well, no, you're right, but they didn't believe it would happen. They didn't want to.
But even
right.
So, even with everything right. That they had, the resistance, it's shocking in hindsight, there was no resistance. As they began to conquer one nation after the other, it's just like, okay, whatever you want, take over the country. It's shocking.
At a time, because it wasn't unified. The resistance wasn't unified.
Whatever it is, it's Bahashkocha Pratis, but there was no resistance. They just. When a Rosh is given a koyach, look at Esau, look at in the story of the Megillah, same thing. Haman Achashverosh, the goal is avoid them. Let's see, it says Rashi, Dibur Ham Rashi, Pasuk Ches, Yochilu, Yatzlich, Pasuk Hey, in page 86, Yatzlichu, Yochilu, Yatzlichu, Vidoveloi, Alkein Lo, Yochil Tuvo, he's not, his good will not be successful. He will not be a successful person. The good will not succeed. The Yeshua Farshan Yochilu Kamo Yochulu Al Rosh to be stow on his head. So Yochilu, how would that fit into the words over here in this pasuk? Yochilu Dirachav Vuchales, it is granted to him. Basically, what we mean over here is whatever he wants, he gets. It's chal. It's a chalois. A chalois means.
Chail. Chail. Israel
or strength. Yachulu al roish. Yachulu. In the pasuk in Yoav, Yachulu al roish Yoav. Does it not mean there to bestow?
That's different.
But that's what Rashi is quoting. Rashi is quoting those words. I think when he said chayil is yatzlichu, strength.
Yeah.
So strength is success. So what you're saying is chayil oise chayil is the first interpretation of Rashi. Yatzlichu, success. Yep. Success is related to oso chayil. He does valor,
right.
Strength. But then Rashi is giving us a second interpretation. And it's telling us it doesn't mean strength, it means it's granted. It comes from an expression of whatever you want, you get. You want good, you want this, we'll give you this, we'll give you this, we'll give you this. A Rashi, he wants something, he gets it. It's not a matter, it's a different. It's obviously that's success. If you get whatever you want, you're successful, but it's from a different angle. A different angle. So, it will be bestowed, it will come upon the head of Yoav. He will be granted his request. Next, so Rashi over here says something a little bit different than the Mitzudos. It doesn't just say Mishpat. When this Mishpat doesn't automatically mean suffering. Person has a din Torah. We have $1 million. We made a business deal. We're fighting over $1 million. What happens if I lose? I suffer? No, I got another $1 million in the bank. Okay? You have $1 million, so you fight over $1 million. There's no suffering. You win, you lose. You win some, you lose some. That's not called suffering. It's just you don't have a good lawyer. Over here, Rashi says the Mishra means poronos, punishment. Punishment, penalty. Penalty. Misulakim u'rochigim mishpatei yisudim u'puronos sholcha minegdo she'enom boi molav. He never is never punished. Call it tzarav yofiach bohem b'hafocha ruachu mafiach bohem. He just blows on them. They nevum l'fonav and they fall in his presence. Let's look at the Likutei Shas. Let's see if we just run through this very quickly. The Likutei Shas in this pasuk. Yochilu d'rachal b'chaleis moram mishpatecha minegdo call it tzarav yofiach bohem. On page 87. Rabbi Dostai b'rabbi Moson Omer. Mutu l'hiskodes b'rasham b'el mazeh. Okay, this is exactly what I was mentioning to you before. Are you permitted to provoke a wicked person? Haman. Mordechai did this to Haman. Haman comes out of the palace and Mordechai, what are you going to the palace for, Mordechai? What are you going there? Go away. What does Haman Mordechai do? He stands there. He goes bedavka to sit down in front of Haman, not to stand up and not to bow down. What do you have to go to the palace and go and not bow down? Don't go to the palace. If you won't go to the palace, he won't see you. He won't see you, so you won't bow down to him, and you won't provoke him. Shalom al Yisrael. No. Mordechai decides, I'm going to go to the palace, I'm going to sit in the front, and when he comes out, I'm bedafka not going to bow down to him. I'm going to provoke him. What are you doing? What are you provoking him? He's going to make a gzeir on Klal Yisrael. What are you starting up with him? So Rabbi Dostai, Rabbi Nosnam, and Mutul Liskars, Mordechai Hayuhudi, he paskin like Rabbi Dostai. Go, provoke him. Adarabba, provoke him, make trouble for Klal Yisrael. Shenemar, Oizve Soira, Yahalalu Rasha, those who abandon the Torah, Yahalalu Rasha, and then the Rai is in the end of the pasuk. The end of the pasuk goes on to say, and those, okay, I don't remember the whole pasuk, but the end of the pasuk says, Adarabba, go provoke him. Eine, really? Are you allowed to provoke a Rasha? It's our pasuk. He's successful. Al tiskaribo. Run away.
It's his time.
Run away. Don't go near him. He'll wipe you out in 1 second. You know, with all of your righteousness, once the Satan is given over into his hands, you're finished. You don't stand a chance no matter what. Shenemar, here's the pasuk that we learned today. Yochilu d'racha b'choleitz. V'loyoit, el t'shazoichin b'din. You'll take him to court? He'll win, even no matter what. Shenemar, moroi mishvetach l'minegle. V'loyoit, el t'shazoichin b'tzarov. He'll see the downfall of his enemies. Shenemar, kol l'tzarov yefiach b'chem. Sevastira, how do we answer the contradiction? We must end the second one. Yomar, loikasha, ha'milideich ha'milid l'shamaya. So the difference is, in milidish shamaya, that's a very interesting answer. It's one answer. The first answer is that if you want to go provoke him regarding religion, provoke him. If it's a melcheme of money, in other words, let's say he's a ganaf, don't start up with him. You're going to lose. If you see that he's very successful, he stole from you $1 million, and you're going to go try to provoke him and take him to court, you're going to lose. You're going to lose and you're going to suffer. Sometimes it's better. It's a business loss. Cut your losses. Even though you're entitled to the money, it's your money. But we all know the lawyer's fees will consume a lot more money. You know, you have a din tie with someone, there's the problem, and you need to go to court. The lawyer fees are more than the money you're dealing with. I'm 100% right. This person is like ganaf. It's not worth it. Same thing. Even if the lawyer fees are worth it, if this person is a Russia and he's successful, then you're going to lose. Just stay away, write off the loss. But what happens if it's a melchemes shemayim? He's an anti-religious person. He's causing trouble for the Jewish people in religion, in their observance of HaTorah. Fight with him. Then you'll succeed. If you're going to fight with him, nugeya shemad, you're not allowed to learn Torah, do mitzvahs, then you can win. That's answer number one. Answer number two. You say, no. Even when it comes to Mila Shemaya, even if the Russia is preventing you from learning Torah, from doing mitzvahs, stay away from him. Don't fight with him. If the Russia is successful, stay away. Even Mila Shemaya. If he's not successful, then fight with him. Now, according to that answer, Mordechai got a problem. Because Haman was Mila Shemaya. And it was Shehashah, it was Misachekeslo. So you have to go say some very, very sophisticated drush that already Mordechai was able to see in Haman his downfall. He saw already. Each one. Okay, you have to say that. If you're a Tzadik Gomor, then you'll win even when it's Shasha Misachislo. But if you're not at Tzadik Gamor, no one today can call themselves at Tzadik Gamor.
The Gemara discusses the whole idea of did Mordechai have a right to do
that?
That's
the case.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So what he said, what the Gemara says over there is that, I mean, what the Mepharshim say on the Gemara is that the Gadol Hador has a right to put himself out there to make a show because people are watching him and they
okay,
like
so he's
him.
Different.
So if he's willing to be Moshe Nefesh,
this is a very
will follow him. If he knuckles under, then the Gemara asks the question about other people.
The Gemara says, what's the difference between the Tzaddik and the Tzaddik Gomor? Someone who protests.
If the one that's named the protest, it's Tzaddik Gomor.
Because
he was at Tzaddik Gomor. That's what Menachem was saying. Okay, but look, it's very relevant today in politics because there are always problems with bris milah, shechita, Jewish education. So there are solutions. You'll import the meat from another country. Bris milah, you know, there are many times when there are issues, there are solutions under the radar. And then there is the approach, let's fight. Let's go rally.
Go public.
Where do you draw the balance? It's very relevant. When you see this, it's very, very relevant in this whole sugya. Our enemies, who are the enemy? Are they in the geder of Shehashah Misa Chekesloy? Or are they just, you know, politicians that are asleep at the wheel? You know, and who's fighting? Who's the one? What's our real kavan? Is our real kavan is the L'shem Shemayim? Or is it about money? Are there other elements that are in the mix of what we're really trying to do? This is a big, big topic in Jewish history of when you see we are targeted, and what do we do? What approach do we take? America is obviously a whole new phenomenon that never existed. The whole country is made up by the people, for the people, of the people. So, and you know, there are so many different variables. Who's to say what to do? Okay, we'll take a short break. What? With the new government. What do you do? Also, you know, I remember they had the gay parades in Eretz Yisrael. It was a very big machlokes between the Ger Rebbe and who was the other camp? Other. The Ger, which is very, very, very powerful, he says, just ignore it. Just ignore the whole thing. No one should go protest. Just ignore it. Right. And there were other very big, not talking very, very well established Gedolim that says, no, you can't, you have to make a protest. You know, yesh v'yesh. Yes, yes. You can't generalize.
One of the things that I said before, the Jews heard like Episcopalians and they looked like they came from this. Milton Himmelfarb was a well-known sociologist.
Yosef said, Yoshaftov Yeretz Goshen.
Mordechai, in the Medrash version, Mordechai says,
you won't have the problem. Blabin Shtetl, and don't become one of the Egyptians. Fly on the radar.
By the way.
And we cause our own problems.
Is
what? Common is 4G. Is it 4G?
4G, yeah.
Better than 5G.
Better than 5G?
Yeah, because
I was telling you, why does it say if Lacibayomo was Eretz Goshen, Rakbi Eretz Goshen, Lohoya? Yosef said Yoshaftov Eretz Goshen, the Jews could have avoided a lot of the tzoras that they had in Mitzrayim, and they just stayed in Goshen and not try to mix into Egyptian society. And Yosef warned them, Yoshaftov Eretz Goshen. It's one of the things I harped on because it came to me what does it mean Moshav in Israel the history of Sunday. The Jews as a nation was 430 years. What does that mean in terms of Moshav in Israel Yashir Yashiru Mitzrayim? Because even after Lech Lecha, God and Abraham went down to Mitzrayim, went to Eretz Yisrael. If the first time it was a famine, the fallback position was, well, we have a problem, we go to Mitzrayim. Yitzchak wanted to go to Mitzrayim, and Abraham did it again. And then Yitzchak wanted to go, but he didn't go. Yaakov sent the people down to Mitzrayim. It was a famine. They went to Mitzrayim. It was always... When I say when they're traveling in the Midbar, why didn't the Rosh Hashanah from Mitzrayim come? Go to another place. See, you don't want to stay in the Midbar. Go, you don't have to go back to Mitzrayim. Go someplace else. So what God wanted them to do was to literally see Mitzrayim, get that out of your mind. So Moshav B'nei Israel, the fallback position was always, what do you have this thing about Mitzrayim? And we have to, Kamasei Eretz Kananu, Asher Yishavtev Lo Sasu, Kamasei Eretz Mitzrayim. I need to get rid of it. Get rid of it. And then what compounded the thing is, when it says, Gamera Barba Loi Tom, I don't want them there because they're going to bring along with them, they are Mitzrayim. So I'm taking you out of Mitzrayim so that you become a new nation, and now you're bringing it along with you. So they even have so what I said was, how do we get around saying the whole idea of halalo of the Avodah Zarah, halalo of the Avodah Zarah, right? We say that. But then you have on the other hand, we say Shiloshinu es Shabam, Loshinu es Lashonam. So what does that mean? They reached a point where the idol worship that they had, they stayed, like they dressed like Jews, they kept their Jewish names, but they reached a point where idol worship, this is Yiddishkeit. That's what they thought the Yiddishkeit was. This was part of being a Jew. You did these things. So that's what it means. Or else how do you justify, rectify them being both together? So they were 430 years. Their history is 430. It's not that they were in Mitzrayim, but mentally, they were in Mitzrayim for 430 years. Even Abraham, he went down to Mitzrayim. And the Ramban criticizes him for that, right? Because why not stay? So, all right, but he came through. But the point is, get it out of your head, the whole concept of always going to Egypt when you're in trouble.
Two things I want to
mention.
First, urgent care. What did it happen in the next room? My doctor the next room. The policy of urgent care, which you must see a provider. If you have a strep test, anything, you must see the provider. Why? Because the provider, they get paid $200 just to see a doctor. It's all about money. It's all about money. The other thing that's very interesting is I saw, you know, Schnitzel, the show that was on network, you heard about that show?
Yeah, my wife, I never watched it. So this, I don't want to get involved in anything. I don't have to.
The cast was in the Temple Emmanuel in the city. My wife got tickets to see the cast. Temple Emmanuel, the place was
called. One second to Broadway.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, same actually, like John Canton. And it just dawned on me.
92,
90%.
797.
And this is UJA Federation's mostly supported, not by Orthodox, but before the some conservative. So in the paper, the Jewish Week, when you read anything in there, it's always about intermarriage and LGBT, all leaning to the left as much as you can get away.
The editor in chief, Guy Rosenblatt, is the one.
It's even worse now that the Harry was there.
So he's very clever. Really clever.
He's not there anyway. But
he retired a few years ago.
It's online.
He was an Orthodox Jew, and
my classmate.
And he deals with the Reform and Conservative, and the mix is very, very weak.
or as far left Orthodox that it's
a very
dangerous. All the UJA Federation money is for the Reform. A lot of it is. It's not from Orthodox people.
No.
You're getting some there, but
not as much as before. What's the point?
Manhattan left.
Gary Rosenblatt presented the paper for many years as an Orthodox paper. He presented it.
No.
Very modern. Very, very
constantly intermarriage.
Oh, now it's over.
Justifying intermarriage, justifying
any
deviance was okay.
It was over, but when he was the editor, it was a very dangerous.
No, he tried to straddle, but even when he covered the Orthodox, it was critical. I mean, the way he bashed National Council when they were going through their terrible times.
He bashed a lot of people.
He bashed mainstream Orthodox, only celebrated the left of Orthodoxy. Well,
he really got a lot of...
Very disappointing.
He gave a lot of people a lot of
agnes nefesh. I knew him in school. You know, he was my classmate.
He had to move to the left. To keep the paper existing is what he wanted it to be. And to keep his job. I don't know about the job itself. I'm sure he could have gotten another job.
He's a very talented person.
Oh. Yeah.
Very. Cornrack told me that he has.
But that whole thing with the urban kids stuff, it's all ripple.
Yeah.
It's all. Right. So you see all these people online, and I wonder, do they have to see a provider before they get the test? They're going
to
pay them $200 a person besides the test.
When you got tested, they take your blood pressure.
Yeah, the guy came, but it's nothing to blood pressure.
No, really, it's nothing. You know how much money they get for that?
They get paid $200 a visit, a 5-minute visit. The guy actually came to me. I don't know if he took my pressure.
And
I need the X-ray. My doctor sent me for an X-ray. So my wife said, "Why go to the X-ray place on Avenue Z? The urgent kid does an X-ray. They get
a lot of money.
It's all about money. And you know something? They're all owned by Orthodox people. You know what's it's all about this. You know that. You see them opening up all over the place on Avenue J. You know where the drugstore is.
Another one.
Gigantic. You see how many people are online?
It's going to backfire again because eventually the government's run out of money. Eventually, you can't go on like this forever.
They throw money away like crazy.
The country cannot go on like this forever.
I said, if they're paying them like a couple $100, not to put a test, but to see the provider before, I don't know. To me, it's all reported.
Listen,
my wife had knee surgery. Meniscus. Went to hospital special surgery. So we got the bill. Well, the Medicaid paid for it. The doctor billed $12,000 for surgery. It's about a 20-minute surgery.
How much did you get paid, though?
I get paid about $600 to $700 for a 20-minute surgery.
So he can bill all he wants. Who cares? He gets paid. But I'm talking about you're actually getting paid $200. Your case. The surgeon bills $12,000, but he only got paid $600.
That's it. To me, it's too little for a surgeon.
That's it. So that's fair.
Too little for a surgeon. I think he deserved more. He's, you know, really. But a couple of thousand. They paid him $2,000. I said reasonable. $12,000 a little crazy. The hospital's another crazy bill. You know, like.
Okay, so if he got $600, that's fair. That's there.
Not for a surgeon.
What?
Not for an orthopedic surgeon.
He did a 20-minute surgery. That's pretty good to make in 20 minutes, $600. That's pretty good.
That's for us, but not for doctors.
Not for doctors?
You're talking a different...
I hear what you're saying. I don't know. A lot of doctors I know can barely make ends meet.